south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. First, I'd like to read you this email, and then, if I have time, I think I will, tell you a very interesting and enlightening story. A real-life boots-on-the-ground story that happened to my friend, that really does deserve to be made into a movie. All right, here we go. This one's from listener Dave. He says, I've listened to a good many of your podcasts and enjoy them thoroughly. I unfortunately am in the category of, quote, government worker. Now, before you throw rocks, I'm military, so it's not like I work at the DMV or something. I agree that things are going to be coming to a head soon here. I have 11 years before I retire, and hopefully I'll be able to get my pension and Social Security together. My worry is that I won't. So my question is, with some of my disposable income, is there something I should be investing in to hedge my bets? For example, acreage in Latin America, gems, jewels, Bitcoin, beans, bullets, whatever. I know that a lot of others are wondering this as well. Since my plan B is a number of years away, do you have any suggestions as to things that can be done to prepare for our future move? Thanks, Johnny, and I look forward to all your podcasts. Invaluable stuff. P.S. We are starting on our Spanish. Step one. All right, Dave, first things first. You know, if anyone out there thinks they can sit around for even 2 years to wait to get that plan B going, in my opinion, and so many people I know that are smarter than I am, if you're thinking you've got some time, some breathing room, you're creating an unrealistic and extremely optimistic future in your own mind. Because you see, all signs point to some kind of very big blowout coming in the next year. You know, it always amazes me. Everyone knows, at least everyone with a brain knows, something big's coming and it ain't good. So what's it going to be? Economic, social, environmental, biological, or even a toxic mix of the above? So smart people know that, but they always want to fit the calamity into their own schedule. And mostly they want to push the big blowout to right after they start collecting their pension or Social Security. What that just means is there's going to be a lot of very smart people who procrastinated, sitting in the living room having a family crisis meeting, wondering what the hell they're going to do next. But you know, again, everyone has to do these things at their own pace. And of course, everyone has their own comfort level. Though one thing's for sure, when things start going down the tube fast, the pressure's on and that multiplies the stress. So the question is, how are your decision-making abilities going to hold up under severe conditions? Have you been tested yet? Well, you soon will be. Now, I have no doubt that people are forever going to get their government pensions and Social Security checks. That goes for welfare and food stamps, too. However, I'd say people in the private sector who are getting pensions will be screwed. That's not to say government workers with pensions and Social Security won't be screwed either. They'll still get those checks, but they will certainly not have any semblance of the purchasing power they have today. Yep, Social Security, pension, and disability checks will come because the government can print money. Whereas private businesses are screwed when they go broke, and thus, no pension. I always laugh when I hear young people in the workforce say, hell, I'm paying into Social Security, but I'm never going to see it. What that tells me is that they have an incomplete financial education. That just means they don't understand the concept of fiat funny money, that the government can just keep printing it. Yeah, they're extremely good at that, you know. However, if you don't have your plan B in line pretty soon, you might think about getting that book, 101 Ways to Disguise Cat Food. What, you say there's no such book out there? Hey, now, there's a niche waiting to be filled. Any budding writers out there? Here's a title, Cat Food Helper for Dummies. Yum, yum. Bottom line, everyone who listens to this program and alternative news sources knows the crap's going to hit the ventilator soon. There's just too many tipping points about to roll over now. And my advice, just don't try to fit the timing of the next big economic or social calamity into your projected retirement schedule. That kind of thinking's not logical. What you should be doing right now is getting all your Plan B ducks lined up, getting out of debt, pay those credit cards off, get lean and mean. At the same time, you should be working on getting some of your assets out of the country. as well as arranging and applying for permanent or temporary residency in a foreign country, preferably a Latin country, since they are the easiest and least expensive to accomplish. So then how do you work out a formula to get those ducks lined up for that plan B? Well, easiest way is to come down to one of my Expat Insider seminars. The next one's coming up in about 6 weeks. You still have time to sign on, even get in on the early bird discount, which ends on June 1st. So if you sign up by then, you'll save $500 off the regular price. Again, we'll be doing it in and around Guatemala, mostly way off the Gringo tourist trail in the Altiplano, a place almost no one's ever heard about or experienced. My favorite spot, by the way. So if you come, you'll see with your own eyes so many of the things we talk about on the show. One thing you won't see, however, are gringos. They will probably be the only gringos in nearly every place we go. That's a good thing, you know? And a big part of what makes up our gringo advantage. And when the gringos start piling in, that soon wears off, and we get to be a slight irritant to the local population. I mean, put yourself in their shoes. Because inevitably, you raise the cost of living, they suffer, and they start looking at you as just a dollar sign. They see all you have, that raises their expectations, and suddenly you're not so happy anymore. A not-so-pleasant cycle, I've seen it many times. Costa Rica, Panama, many places in Mexico, and now Colombia and Ecuador. Not everywhere in those countries, of course. Well, everywhere in Costa Rica. But the change in expectations and social norms spreads like wildfire in a particular country. So as the gringos pile in and make their little gringified areas and islands, your gringo advantage disappears and, for the locals, turns slowly into gringo envy. And believe me, that ain't a good thing. Which is why I absolutely prefer living off the gringo tourist trail myself. Sure, at first it's much, much easier to hang with a bunch of gringos. Because, as you might expect, living off the gringo tourist trail is a big step, and you really have to know some Spanish, and if you don't know any, you'll learn fast, believe me. But the saving grace, if you want to call it that, for people that are just a little afraid or hesitant to take the plunge, that is, living off the gringo tourist trail like I do, is that there are so many off the gringo tourist trail locations that are kind of near a gringo hotspot, you know, within a half an hour or an hour, so you can get your gringo fix when you need it. And it's amazing, too, the vast difference in rents. The closer you get to the gringo-wise areas, the higher the rents jump. In fact, I could prove it over and over again. What you can get for $800 a month in a gringo-wised area, you can get for half or less when you're off the gringo tourist trail, just a half an hour or 45 minutes away. And you'll see that if you come down to my seminar. So as this show is going out on Sunday, May 27th, you got about 4 days to sign up and get in on the early bird discount, save $500. To get all the info, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link. The sign-up blurb also explains everything you need to know about those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. If you're thinking about doing business in Latin America, man, you can't do better than take one of those trips. Guaranteed, it never fails. That's when those business ideas really start percolating. Now, if you just can't swing coming to the seminar, the very best way to get your plan B together, get the ducks lined up and all that, is take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. And you get the 3 free introductory videos to the 9-hour course. That's www.expatplanb.com. And don't forget the www, or you won't get there. Now, just one very important thing about Dave's email. He says towards the end, "Johnny, my question is, are there some things in Latin America I should be investing in to hedge my bets before I get there?" All right, fair enough. I get asked that all the time. Now, I'm no investment analyst, but I can tell you this. I have not been a good investor in traditional financial instruments and such. In fact, before I came down to Latin America 27 years ago or so, I tried lots of little easy so-called get-rich-quick or not-so-quick schemes. I got sucked into buying some of those courses those midnight TV success gurus were selling. Some of you remember those old audio courses on cassette. They didn't have DVDs back then. You know the drill. $199. Learn how to play the stock market. Learn how to trade options. Learn how to do arbitrage with currencies. Flipping houses. Buying foreclosures. Yep, I admit I got sucked into a few of those. Did you? Back then, before the internet, there are all kinds of snail mail promotions like that. And you know what? I either lost money or broke even on everything I tried. That's why I haven't done any kind of speculative market or financial stuff in 30 years. Now, the market experts I know, the ones that are really good at it and make a great living, spend at least 4 hours a day studying and doing charts and analysis and stuff. That's what it takes, you know. You can't just buy a course, listen to it, and spend 10 or 15 minutes a day and watch the cash roll in. That's not going to happen. And that's the big lesson I learned. To make money beating the markets, you really have to be involved in it. It's kind of like the 10,000-hour thing, you know? The reason why almost no kid learns how to play the cello, piano, or guitar well enough to ever make a dime at it. So 30 years ago or so, I recognized that the hard way. And I watched others, including one of my brothers, do the same thing and lose money, or at least never do better than break even. Again, because you can't spend 15, 20, or even a half hour a day beating the market when the big boys have massive computing power and work at it 8 hours or more a day. It's even worse these days when computers can do 1,000 buy-sell trades before you could scratch your nose and hit the send button. Now, of course, I never invested enough money to really degrade my lifestyle. Enough to hurt and feel like a fool, but never enough to lower my standard of living. And that's what your goal should be, too, if you like tinkering with that stuff. But what about when the big one comes along? Now, I wish I could say there are no big ones, but there are. I missed a few. In fact, I missed almost all of them. Mostly because I didn't have any dough when they came around. I know a lot of you missed out, too. And really, the investing trick these days, and it's been like this for some time now, is to preserve your wealth. I mean, it's true that the days of the really spectacular gains are over. Look at what the banks are paying out. And the stock market, an obese bubble, looking for a pin. Sure, you know this stuff already, but in regards to setting up that plan B, you got to get some money and some assets out of the country. That's a priority, right? And that's what Dave's asking. How to hedge your bets. How to make sure you're okay when it does hit the fan. At least get a good enough chunk out of the country so that you can get out yourself and still have some assets wherever you land. And you longtime listeners know, I always recommend, besides getting residency, having a bank account set up in a foreign country that's not linked to a U.S. bank, doesn't have a branch in the U.S. And since it's almost impossible to do that all by yourself now, these days with FATCA rulings and all those U.S. government banking regulations, you'll have to get your residency. That means you'll have to come down and apply for it. And after you've got it, hooray, hooray, you can get a bank account anywhere. Now, to get that residency approved, it could take a year or two. So what do you do in the meantime? Well, that's what your Latin lawyer's for. He's the guy that'll help you set up your residency. And he'll also set up an SA corp for you, too, if you like. And that corporation can be done in about 2 weeks to a month. That corporation can open up a bank account. You'll own it. So guess what? You can immediately pass cash to that new bank account. You don't have to wait a year or two to get residency if you have a corporate bank account. Of course, that'll cost you some dough to set up, maybe from $700 to $5,000 or $6,000, depending on the Latin country. But so does residency. That'll cost you anywhere from $700 to $5,000 too. Again, depending on the country. And my advice, if you're not gonna set up a business in Latin America, you probably really won't need a corporation. In my opinion, I see too many gringos getting a corporation and they don't really need them or use them much. So then how do you get a quickie bank account without waiting a couple of years for residency? Well, talk to your lawyer, and many times he'll be able to set up a bank account for you even if you're not a resident. He'll do it at the same bank he's got accounts at, therefore they know him, trust him, and he'll be your sponsor. Nope, he won't have signatory powers over your account, unless, of course, you're out of the country a lot and you want him to have signatory powers. In any case, if you want a bank account and aren't a resident, your lawyer's the only guy that can grease the wheels to get you one, which means you must have a good, honest Latin lawyer. The big problem? How to find one. Of course, if you come down to the seminar, we'll hook you up with one right away. But if you're coming down to a Latin country on your own, well, then you are on your own. Finding a good, honest lawyer is like throwing a dart at the legal section in the Yellow Pages. You remember the Yellow Pages, don't you? And you know, someone once asked me, Johnny, what's the percentage of lawyers in Latin America that are crooks versus the ones that are honest and trustworthy? Excellent question. Now, if you're talking about out-and-out crooks, ones that'll actually lie and steal behind your back, well, you definitely don't want one of those guys. But how can you tell? Now, all Latin lawyers are known for really bending the rules, but you want them to be bending the rules in your favor, not his. So again, the question is, how many are real dyed-in-the-wool crooks? I'd say when you're on the gringo tourist trail, 50%. And I'll stand by that too, because I got so many examples. You hear that? 50%. Now, of course, like most parasites, they don't want to kill the host, so they'll keep sucking your blood, but they won't finish you off. In fact, you might even think he's a great guy because he's not nearly as expensive as those lawyers up in the States. But still, I'll stand by that number. 50% of the lawyers on the gringo tourist trail anywhere in Latin America are going to gouge you as much as the traffic will bear. Now, it is a different story completely when you're off the gringo tourist trail. What's the percentage of vipers there? I'd say 10%. Why so low compared to the lawyers on the gringo tourist trail? Well, because off the tourist trail, where everyone speaks Spanish and almost no one speaks English, clients of lawyers can actually understand what they're saying and read the documents they're producing for whatever given situation. And you know, lawyers on the gringo tourist trail have learned that they can get gringos to sign just about anything because they don't understand what's going on, nor could they possibly read a document that's so loaded with Spanish legal terms. I know, you get the point. And the simple fact is, off the gringo tourist trail, lawyers simply don't have gringos as clients, which gives them almost no way to develop the methods to gouge gringos. Anyway, once you've found an honest lawyer, you could transfer money down to his account as a pass-through, or he can hold it for you, or immediately deposit it to a bank account that you've established earlier, or a corporate account that you've established earlier. So you got some of your money down, then what? Well, I always recommend you have some gold or silver, not bullion. Should have the well-known and easily tradable coins that you get at coin and pawn shops. You know, like Canadian maple leaves and American eagles. And in the case of silver, pre-1965 coin change called junk silver. How much should you have? Well, the more the merrier. And should you store it at one of those gold or silver storage vaults? Never. Always take possession. And you can come down with your stuff, that is, fly with it. Depending on how much you have, there's controversy on whether you have to report it when you fly through. Talked about that in a past show. Or you can ship it down insured. Better yet, you can buy gold and silver here in Latin America. There are tons of jewelry shops that are hecho y mano, meaning they make the jewelry by hand. So they use raw gold and coins. And in the big cities, they also have quite a few little coin shops. Yep, there are coin collectors here in Latin America and shops where you can buy and sell. Next, you might want to pick up some real estate and some land or even a small farm. And my suggestion, always try to buy from a distressed seller, one who's had it on the market for a long, long time. You know there's a huge building boom and bubble going on here in Latin America, so there are lots of quality properties with no one to buy. Oh, one more thing. You know, people are very afraid about putting money into Latin banks. They think, hell, if U.S. banks are unstable, Latin banks are worse. They're just bad, corrupt copies of bad, corrupt U.S. banks. And you know, in a lot of cases, they are. But your lawyer will tell you about the usually two or three top banks that have been around more than 75, sometimes even 100 years, owned by the big sugar, pineapple, tobacco, cement, and sugar magnates. Yep, the strongest banks in Latin America are infinitely stronger than the banks up in the States because they're owned and operated by huge, usually agricultural interests, who figured out a long, long time ago that it was in their best interest to have their own banks. Why let another bank make the money off the interest and the operations? And because it's their agricultural assets behind the bank, they're very conservative. Most of them have no derivative exposure, and they get 20 to 30% down for a home mortgage. You know, in recent memory in the States, you could get a mortgage at times for zero down, which was one of the reasons for that big 2007-2008 financial blowout, you know. Well, they never experienced such a thing here in Latin America. In fact, when you bring it up, they don't even know what you're talking about. It's kind of refreshing, really. Now, of course, I never recommend any type of real estate project. I've got no pet projects. I make no commissions. I just recommend real estate land, farms, etc. In general, I've got no project that I direct people to. Not like International Living and the English-speaking gringo realtors in Ecuador and Colombia who will take you to their pet projects and gouge you every time and you won't even know it. Now, I'll tell you what I don't recommend. I never recommend you get in on one of those so-called avocado or teak plantation projects run by gringos. You've heard me say this before, but I've never met a single person who's ever made any money investing in one of those things. Yep, the numbers and projections are always fantastic, but Nobody ever makes any money. The only guys making money are the ones selling the project and printing out the pamphlets. And I'm not saying all of them are ripoffs or out to screw you, but guess what? I know a lot of gringos who've invested in those projects who've been taken to the cleaners, some more than once. So I do get plenty of emails from people asking me what I would recommend people invest in down here in Latin America or investing in general. And I just told you what I say to most all of them. Now, when you get a bank account down here, and you really should, I wouldn't keep a lot of money in it. Oh, you can load it up if you're looking to make a land investment, let's say, but don't keep it there for a long term. Because, you know, the day of reckoning is coming for fiat currencies, and it's only a matter of time before the world finds out the emperor's got no clothes. Which brings me to a subject of very special interest for me. Now, you longtime listeners know, in a past life, I was a real engineer, yep. Had 1 foot in the real world and 1 foot in the geek world. And back then, they weren't nerds yet, they were pencil-necked geeks. And being that I can understand, at least to some degree, and communicate with, to some degree, even the most extreme nerds and geeks, I actually enjoy the occasional mind-expanding, sometimes brain-fogging conversation with said clan. Yep, while the rest of the world might avoid them, especially pretty girls, I recognize their brilliance and have a core of very brilliant friends. They're all smarter than I am, but if you just listen and nod once in a while, they don't hold it against you because they think you actually get what they're saying. Now, I don't suppose I told you this, but one such guy, a very nice guy, came to my second seminar around 5 years ago. Liked it so much, he never left. He's down here permanently now. You might remember I told you a Canadian guy and his wife, she's a Ruski, drove their trailer down through the U.S., through Texas, all the way down to Guatemala. Well, the part I didn't tell you was that he asked me if he could park his trailer in front of my place in the coffee fields, where there's nobody else around, believe me, while he looked around for a nice gated, guarded community to move to. Well, what started out as a 2-week stay turned into 6 months. No problem. Nice guy, quiet, banging away at his computer day in and day out in that little trailer. Of course, he'd walk over to the house, and I'd visit him in his little trailer, and he'd show me that he was buying these little blocks of coins by the hundred called Bitcoin. I remember at the time, he's paying about $11 a piece. He kept saying, Johnny, you really got to get some of this stuff. Remember, this is 5 years ago, and I'm thinking, digital money backed by nothing? Well, I know fiat currency's backed by nothing, but digital money? How's that going to go? Then he explained this thing called the blockchain again, 5 years ago. Yep, the famous blockchain. It was a terrifically new concept that made absolute sense to me. Except, at the time, the buying and selling of this Bitcoin stuff was only going on between a tiny percentage of true geeks. And unlike today, stores and businesses were not taking it. And believe it or not, the first group to actually take it as currency were gamers. So you had all the gamers around the world buying up Bitcoin and using it in their little gaming fantasy lands. In fact, this guy was gaming 4 to 8 hours a night with his internet buddies all over the world. And they all were picking up this Bitcoin stuff to use as payment for purchasing virtual land and buildings and spaceships and stuff for different gaming platforms. Now, back then, I thought, hey, this stuff's way too difficult to purchase for the average guy, and no one accepts it except gamers. And when I said that, he said, but Johnny, look at all the shoeshine boys. They live in tin shacks with one light bulb, no hot running water, yet they've got smartphones and are running apps like Skype. He said, look, Johnny, they don't have to know what it's all about. If it makes their life easier, eventually they'll adapt and use it. Meanwhile, the price of these little Bitcoin blocks this guy was buying by the hundreds was starting to go up. A year or so later, when he'd long since moved out and found himself a really nice gated guarded subdivision, he called me up and said, Johnny, you know, you really ought to buy some of this stuff. It's gaining acceptance outside the nerd circle. And you can even buy some stuff on the internet with it. And he said it's no longer 11, it's $50. So I bought in. I was in for a little less than 10% of what he was, and he had 2,000 of them. And still, back then, it was a bit difficult to buy the stuff. And by the time I did, the price was at about $60 each. Then, little by little, within the next year, the price moved up to 100, then 150, then to 200. Then there was the Silk Road scandal and Motgox scandal, and it oscillated a lot between 200 and 500 for a long while. In the meantime, as always, I kept getting dozens and dozens of emails from people saying, Johnny, what should I invest in? I'd tell them just what I told you now about gold, land, banks, silver, and that upstart currency, Bitcoin. In fact, around 3.5 years ago, at every seminar, I started doing a couple of minutes spiel on Bitcoin, talking about it and such. I spoke about how it could be a nice speculative investment or just used nearly anonymously to move money around. In other words, if you got in and out really fast, let's say you did a transaction within a day or two, you wouldn't suffer any swings or fluctuations. So what's the point of all this? Well, for the last 3.5 years, I've also said Bitcoin. Why? Because I had something that almost no one I knew had. A friend who was a ground floor Bitcoin insider. By the way, this guy taught the very first Bitcoin and cryptocurrency university class in the world, and he's still doing it. Oh, and if you come to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll get to meet him personally. He always shows up and hangs with us for a while. Now understand, I had inside information on Bitcoin years before it caught on. Now look, this is an historic event that's happening right now. Basically, these things that go up thousands of percent only come around once in a generation. The equivalent of owning a McDonald's in the 50s or 60s, Microsoft or Apple shares in the 70s or 80s. And you know, it's all about the blockchain. It's going to revolutionize all contracts, financial transactions in the future, and it's going to kill the banking system and the government-issued currencies. And they know it, so they're either trying to kill it or jump on board to try to save themselves. But look what's happened. It's bouncing around between 2,000 and 3,000 right now. So for full disclosure, people who know me and you longtime listeners also know I said buy when it was 100, buy when it was 200, buy when it was 300, yada, yada, yada. Now, I'd never bring it up unless people asked, and they asked me all the time, Johnny, what should I do? What should I invest in? Or they'd say, what are you invested in, Johnny? And you know what? Back then, every time I'd mention it, I'd get the same response from non-engineers and non-technical types. They'd say, it's not real money, it's not sanctioned by governments, it's used by criminals, it was created by the NSA to spy on us, it's jackable and hackable, and on and on. So then, who got in early? Well, just like Apple and Microsoft, the geeks, the nerds, the adventurous, and the chance takers.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.